Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. Then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk.
Good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We've got Kirk here. We may have JB the program develops this evening. I am still perturbed over the whole response to George Floyd's death and the riots and protests that have transpired, and now the wants and needs of the protesters. You know, they have asked for the most amazing things. The employees of Ford the other day petitioned the chairman and said they wanted to stop making police cruisers, because by making a police cruiser, the police are aiding and abetting racism. And how in the world can you be that utterly crazy? It is just astonishing. And one of the things that is so amazing about all this, and all the things they want to change, all of the names they want to change, all of the people they want to dishonor and disown, the claims they are making about the United States, that they built it and didn't get paid for it, so what they really want is reparations. And when you study this, it really has nothing to do with Black Lives. This is a political and economic movement of the extreme left trying to shape the world and their vision, which has always failed. And if you look at the person that is allegedly the spark plug for all of this, George Floyd, and we talked about his behavior the day of the incident, his death, on previous shows. And we talked about the officer that killed him and the fact that he was a lot of things, but he was not a racist. And so the very thing that's being projected upon him is untrue. And the Minnesota Police Department had no indication of being racist. There's a lot more information on Mr. Floyd now that no one wants to talk about, because everybody wants to talk about him being a hero. You know, Bon Jovi just did a concert praising him. There are pictures of him with angel wings. Well, in 2001, in August 29th, Mr. Floyd was arrested and convicted of a misdemeanor. It was possession of Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even start at the beginning. August 3rd, 1997. He was arrested and convicted of a felony. It was possession of cocaine. In 9/25/1998, just 1 month more than a year later, as is the case with most drug addicts, he was caught stealing, and he was arrested and convicted of his second felony just a year after committing his first felony. On 12/9/1998, just 3 months after his second felony, he is arrested and convicted again, this time of misdemeanor theft. He spends a considerable part of the next year in jail, so there is no 1999 reported crime or 2000 crime because of his jail time for his two felonies and misdemeanor conviction. But in August of 2001, George Floyd is arrested again and convicted of a misdemeanor, failure to identify. In other words, he is a two-time felon and convicted of a misdemeanor. And when the police want to talk to him, he will not provide his identity. Then in 10/29 of 2002, George Floyd is convicted once again of a felony, possession of cocaine. On 1/3/2003, the following year, George Floyd is convicted of misdemeanor trespass, but he could have been just as easily convicted of a felony because he was involved in trespass with the intent of selling to a distributor. In 2/6 of 2004, within a year of that time, George Floyd, still in the state of Texas all this time, is arrested and convicted again of felony cocaine possession. He's a drug addict.
Amazing.
Then on 12/1/2005, George Floyd is arrested, tried, and convicted, and goes back to jail for felony possession of cocaine. Now, I would think that after all of these arrests and convictions of cocaine, you'd say, maybe there's something wrong with my life. Maybe I'm squandering my life. I shouldn't be spending more of my life in jail than out of jail. And what little money I have that I'm stealing, I ought not be spending it on cocaine. But nonetheless, this was the George Floyd of Minneapolis riot instigation. But that's not the worst. On November 27th of 2007, George Floyd was part of a group of men. They first walked up to the door of a woman's house wearing the uniform of the water district. And she saw the person at the door, said, okay, so I'm from the water district. I better answer the door. She opened the door, realized that it was a fake, tried to close the door, and the man pushed the door open. That was not George Floyd. No, George Floyd pulled up in a car with four other men, and all African-American. And George Floyd got out of the car holding a gun. And then he pushed through the doorway to the home, and he held his gun at the abdomen of the woman whose home now they had broken into and were attempting to rob. This is aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon, but it's also assault, it's battery, and imprisonment. George Floyd doesn't just hold the gun to the woman's belly and threaten her. When she does not provide the kind of money and jewelry they're looking for, he pistol whips her. He beats her with the gun.
Yeah.
This is George Floyd. This is the idiot that all of you in Black Lives Matter have been honoring and pretending like he's a hero. He is a man that is like 6'6", 6'7". He's holding a gun to a woman's belly, and then he's pistol whipping her. That's your hero. It, of course, is worse.
Yeah.
He spent 5 years in jail for doing that. He got out of jail about the time he decided that he would leave Texas and move to Minnesota. I had told you that the toxicology report said that George Floyd, the day that he committed robbery, stealing the cigarettes, tried to pass a counterfeit bill, which is a felony, was drunk and intoxicated in public, that he had fentanyl in his system, and that fentanyl is one of, if not the most dangerous drug a person can take today. Would you like to know his toxicity level with fentanyl?
I am not a drug authority here,
so I'm just going to tell you what his toxicity level is, and I will tell you that I did a little research just to find out what that means on the scale of things. He had 11 nanograms per milliliter in his blood of fentanyl, and norfentanyl, he had 5.6 nanograms per milliliter. So I Googled it. And what I found is that there were three studies of people with high levels of fentanyl and norfentanyl in their systems. And everybody with a level of 9 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl or 5.6 nanograms per milliliter of norfentanyl was dead. Their analysis of them was posthumous. That is the level that it takes to kill somebody. I'm not an expert. I just read the scientific research to find out if that was a significant amount of fentanyl. And everyone that registered that amount of fentanyl in their system was having a toxicity test done.
Like postmortem.
Mr. George postmortem. George Floyd. On methamphetamines, he had 19 nanograms per milliliter. I looked that up too. And I couldn't find an example in any of the research with somebody with that high level.
Wow.
And the people they were testing had methamphetamines in their system. They weren't combining drugs, fentanyl, norfentanyl.
Oh, he had both?
Methamphetamine. And oh, by the way, he had 1.2 nanograms per milliliter of THC, commonly known as marijuana. And 0.65 nanograms per milliliter of ANPP, which is a sign that the fentanyl is beginning to kill you. And of course, he was a smoker with a congestive heart diagnosis and a failed respiratory system. This is the hero of Black Lives Matter. You have a serious problem, folks. Should the cop have put his knee on his neck and held it there? No. Is that cop going to, now in jail, is he going to spend a very long time in jail and probably get killed in jail? Yeah, probably. He wasn't a racist, but he was overly violent, overly controlling. His two tours in the military likely made him so. He was having a very bad day. His wife, an Asian woman, left him the previous day. But let's make no mistake. George Floyd was not a hero. George Floyd was a walking time bomb. He was going to die, and he was going to die soon. He, of course, did not practice any level of social distancing, and he had COVID-19 as well.
Really?
He's a man that had spent as much time in jail as out of jail. And he resisted arrest. Now, Kirk, you know, for the past 20 years, when I began doing radio and I began writing, I have been outspoken against the U.S. military and against the police. And I've said it's going to be a disaster for America.
I'm a witness.
Yep. Overly aggressive. way too controlling, too belligerent, too full of themselves, too willing to deprive people of their freedom, and way too dishonest. Mm-hmm. Is that all of them? No. I don't know if it's most of them, but it's enough of the...
It is a culture.
...that it's a part of the culture. And they will defend one another. They'll lie for one another. They will project false information on other people to protect their own and convict the innocent. Lots of people have gone to jail based upon the false testimony of cops. I am not a fan of the cops. Now, not every cop is that way. There are some good ones, but there are some awfully bad ones. And so if you want to protest against the over-aggressive nature of not only the police, but the fact that there's over 200 federal agencies involved in policing, and that they're way too controlling, way too involved in depriving people of their freedoms, way too involved in snooping without due process. You got a case. It's obvious. The militarization of America's police is a serious problem. But I'm here to tell you, you defund them at our peril. As much as I don't like them, as much as every encounter I've had other than just casual conversation with cops is negative. And while I would respond, not aggressively, but I would give them lip. And I always have when a cop is doing the wrong thing. The fact of the matter is, you defund the police, and what you end up with is what's happened in Chicago, in Oregon, in the state of Washington, in New York, with a doubling and tripling of homicides and violent crime. And that is what's happened. There have been a lot of the Black Lives Matter types, and when I say Black Lives Matter types, while as it stands, it is a racist position. Saying all lives matter is not racist. Saying white lives matter is racist. Saying black lives matter is racist.
Should be, yes.
It just flat out is. You know, if I said that Asian lives matter, I would be racist on behalf of Asians. And you wouldn't, no one in the country would tolerate somebody saying white lives matter. If they do, they're called a white supremacist.
Yeah, supremacist. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
There is this myth that these people are promoting, and it is a myth that America is a racist nation, and that it has been built based upon white supremacy. You know, I'm not political. You know that I've been outspoken against my.
Yes.
But, you know, I've also been fair, because anytime somebody wants to counter my criticism of America and say, well, okay, well, what country would be better to live in? I can't give them one.
No.
I can't.
No.
The fact of the matter is, and this is the truth, is that as much as America has done wrong in terms of its military, in terms of its police, in terms of its Department of Justice, as much as America has done wrong, interfering in the world, selling munitions to become the merchants of death, really, to have a military and spy apparatus that's larger than the rest of the world's combined, to squander its currency, and to essentially undermine its economy, to indoctrinate its citizens such that they no longer think. As much as America has done to deserve criticism, the fact of the matter is, it is absolutely and unequivocally the freest place on earth to live. It is the least racist place in the world to live. The most tolerant place to live. It is the most prosperous country in the history of humankind. And it's likely the most generous country. It is the country best known for opportunity and equal opportunity. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Black Lives Matter and the media types hate that. But nonetheless, it's the truth. There's no better place on earth for freedom and for opportunity, for equal rights, for rule of law. As much as I am anti-political and anti-religious, you can't deny the facts. And those are the facts.
Well, that's the only thing that came close to what Yah was looking for when you talk about in the days of Samuel, is he was a Shaphat. And you could go there, and he based it on the Torah and made his decision. So you could appeal to the Shaphat and say, look, guy owes me money. We did this, or he did this to me, or they did, or whatever. And you had an opportunity to reconcile the deal. And that was the one thing that was always great about America. Three. I thought we had a library system where you could go anywhere and read and study. You had freedom of movement. And then I've traveled all over it. So, I mean,
moved to
opportunities and so forth. That was a tremendous thing.
More freedom of movement than any other country.
And in and out. I could go to Australia and live and come back and go and so forth and so on.
Right.
And then the other thing was that if I went into business, I had some opportunity that if they cheated me or they did something, I had a right to appeal in the court and build my case. That is phenomenal. You don't have that hardly anywhere. I mean, there's the Commonwealth nations that are similar, of course, but that was his strength. You could build an opportunity. You could move as high up the ladder. The thing about the Commonwealth nations, although they are free, is there's still a caste system. Britain is a caste system. You can't move from the bottom to the top when you have a queen and all those people that go to, to various colleges and so forth. That's right. They do.
Yeah.
Where we could move from, you could move from nobody to somebody. You could be a basketball player and become a multimillionaire, by the way, which is dominated by black people. Same thing with football and so forth. So there were don't tell me there are no opportunities. I understand.
Oh, but
give me a break. Yeah.
Ethnicity has nothing to do with prosperity. It has nothing to do with opportunity. The only place where ethnicity has anything to do with prosperity is access. If you're an African American with much lower grades and much lower test scores, you'll get into a better college and you're more likely to get a scholarship. You have every advantage, government loans, everything is slanted in your favor, and it's now slanted against particularly the Caucasian male. So the system now is unfair to Caucasian males, and it's also unfair, but in the favor and strongly in the favor of African females and African males. But if you're African female, African American female, the world is your oyster. And if you aren't succeeding, if you aren't getting an education, if you aren't taking advantage of what's being offered to you, then it's your fault. Just look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Now, the realization is that very, very few Caucasians are racist. Are there some? Absolutely. There's redneck racists and there's white supremacist racists. But I'm here to tell you the percentage of whites that are racist is likely less than 5%, might even be less than that. But the percentage of Caucasians that are anti-Semitic, it's probably 3, 4, 5 times the percentage that are racist.
Yeah,
if you want to know a group of people that have every right to complain, that are due reparations, and have been horribly for 3,000 years, who have been enslaved for 400 years
prior to that
in Egypt, and then on another 1,000 years in Europe, it's the Jews. You don't see them out with their hands out saying, you need to pay me reparations. You know, they're talking about this idea that they deserve all of this because they built America. That's utter nonsense. Well, the fact of the matter is, in the states that comprise the Union, slavery was outlawed before they formed the Union. They were never slave states. They were never. The United States,
no,
relates to the Union, unequivocally not built by slaves. Second, the slaves that were in the southern states didn't build the United States. They harvested tobacco. They harvested cotton.
Cotton. Mm-hmm. Take the seeds out.
And
that was the big job.
Was it a horrible economics scheme? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Should we have ended it sooner? Absolutely. But they didn't build America. That's an absolute unmitigated lie. If you got a complaint, base it on fact. Now, the fact of the matter is that the world, prior to the 1600s, 1700s, economically was based on slave labor.
Absolutely.
You know, if you study history, Rome was built on slave labor. Greece was built on slave labor. Sparta was entirely slave labor. Carthage, slave labor. The Aztecs, the Incas, slave labor. The Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Egyptians,
the Hindu labor.
And in some cultures, like in China, slave labor. In Japan, slave labor. In India, they still have a slave labor system, the caste system.
They absolutely do.
It was the way the world operated. Was it right? No. But it's the way the world operated. And the African Americans that became slaves here in America were enslaved almost exclusively by other Africans. Second, they were purchased by Muslims.
Muslims, yes.
Muslims that ran the slave trade out of northwestern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But if African Americans want to complain about slavery, you need to look at the rest of Africa, because that's who enslaved you. You were not enslaved for the first time on those ships coming here. You were enslaved prior to getting on those ships by fellow Africans. But I'd also like to remind you that if you think it's unfair to you here, maybe you should check out what it's like to be a white person in Africa. You know, you have no rights. You can't even buy land. You can't own land. You can't buy land in most African countries. They are racist. In fact, in some African countries like Sudan, you've got the Africans against the Muslims, and they both hate each other, the Arab Muslims. Even the Arab Muslims hate the African Muslims, both of whom hate the African Christians, all of whom hate the African animists.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing.
If you want to look at racism, you should look at the Chinese approach to both Africans and to Caucasians. Look at the Japanese approach, attitude towards everybody who is a Japanese.
Superiority.
Yeah.
Complexes.
Go to any island other than the U.S. Virgin Islands, which is still under constitutional law, and see how the laws differ based upon your skin color and how you have no laws that serve you if you're a Caucasian. So you can't, it's like the Muslims that somehow complain that they're being treated unfairly in America, when in a Muslim country, if you're a Christian, you're killed, you're robbed, you're raped,
That's right.
and you have no recourse. And If you're a Christian in almost any Islamic country, you have no right to vote. You have no access to the courts.
And God forbid you'd be
really
a woman.
Ought to think this thing through and realize there are problems in the world. But the problem isn't white supremacy. It's a myth. And if you're going to rally to a cause, rally around the truth. The other thing, point I wanted to make, because we've already talked about the fact that if a black man or woman is killed, 93% of the time it's by another black man or woman, which is extraordinary when you say that blacks only represent 12 to 13% of the U.S. population, and yet 93% of the time that they are killed is by another black person. In fact, the thing that's so sad today is in Atlanta and in Chicago and New York, there's been scores of young children, little black boys and girls, that have been murdered, all by other blacks. There's a serious problem, and you need to take responsibility in the culture for the problem. But the two points I wanted to make, Kirk, is that one is that when you look at the protests and the idiots that are chanting and protesting and making their demands for Black Lives Matter, look at the crowd. 90%, nah, maybe it's 90, maybe it's 80% of the crowd, certainly 75 to 80% of the crowd, every picture I looked at, they're Caucasians, which means, and they're young. They're young, that have no concept of economics, no sense of personal responsibility. They've grown up in an entitlement system with political correctness, and they couldn't reason their way out of a wet paper bag. And so if you want to pass blame on creating a probably the most dangerous situation we've had in America since the Civil War, it's white anarchists. They're the problem. The other thing I want to mention is that Deshaun Jackson, I think, was the football player that started to quote Louis Farrakhan and Adolf Hitler. And Louis Farrakhan is quite a twosome, right?
You should
say, you know, I'm not the smartest dude in the world. If I'm posting a quote from Adolf Hitler, and by the way, it was a fake quote from Adolf Hitler, posting a quote from Louis Farrakhan to condemn Jews, that's probably not the right source to go to. Just saying.
No.
So Louis Farrakhan, a friend, sent me, because of that, went to listen to the most recent speech given by Louis Farrakhan. He claims to be the Messiah.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And he's calling for the death of all Jews. It's funny. He is calling for Jews to return to the Torah, which he knows nothing about. If he knew about the Torah, he would know that he ain't the Messiah. He's not even Jewish. The Messiah is dope, if he had read the Torah. But... and he doesn't celebrate the seven annual feast. He doesn't observe the Shabbat. And most certainly is not pro-Israel, since he's an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
He's an anti-Semite. But yeah, he's calling for the death of Jews. Yep. But he is the Messiah. Messiah calling for the death of Jews. Isn't that swell? And there are thousands, if not millions, of people.
Wow.
I think our single biggest problem, Kirk, is that we have dumbed down a generation of, and probably two, so that most people under 35 to 40 are just incapable now of exercising good judgment. You know, it's no wonder that there are going to be so few people part of the covenant by the time Yahweh returns. Most people are incapable of examining evidence and thinking correctly about it and responding appropriately. No matter how obvious Chicago makes it, no matter how appealing the offer, they're just
how well you translate
it. Yeah, they're not going to devote the time, and they're incapable of processing it, the information. And we have never been in a more desperate situation. I was listening to a speech just briefly for a few minutes today, and it was talking about Black Lives Matter riots and protests and civil unrest and threats have taken us back to the conditions that are very close to the Civil War. Probably nothing worse since the Civil War. But at the same time, we have destroyed America's culture and character and economics. Because when the real dictators, these governors, particularly of California, New York, and all across the country, Michigan, found such favor in being able to control the lives of people that they disdain. Successful, hardworking individuals. For the first time ever, they were able to control their lives, deprive them of their livelihoods and their freedom, and they did with great glee. For no benefit, by the way. Predicted that, and it's now been proven there was no benefit of doing so.
Yes. Oh, no.
And what was so enormously sad about that is that several years ago, I predicted that the single biggest problem we have is that when challenged, given the choice of what they think is life or liberty, independence or dependence, that almost everyone is going to choose life over liberty and dependence over independence. They're going to willingly give up their freedom and their livelihood because of a fear of death. And when that happens, when you're willing to capitulate like that, then, and people do it in mass, there's no hope for the society. That means that you do not value freedom. If you do not value freedom, you've got no chance of surviving until Yahweh's return. None. You know, so valuing freedom may cost you your life temporarily, but you'll gain it eternally. If you do not value freedom, you have no opportunity, because that's the number one thing Yahweh's offering, is freedom. And livelihood. Yahweh loves work. He wants us to be industrious. And if you're not willing to If you're willing to give up work and become dependent on your government, you have no chance of being part of the covenant. So all of this is interacting and interfering with people's ability to be part of the covenant, but it's also taking the world to the most dangerous that it has ever been. All while the United States and Europe bicker with each other, and China and Russia are being cast as enemies. And it's just a matter of time before China takes over Hong Kong and then sees the world has no means to respond to them, and they take over Taiwan and find out the world is inept in responding to them, because we can't go to war with China. Russia will side with China, and Europe and the United States will be paralyzed. We'll continue to destroy the world through our supplying arms to the Muslims in the Middle East, and it's all going to blow up in our faces. And it's not going to take very long for that to occur. I'm told by my friends who still live in the continental United States that this is a terrifying time. And all I can say to anyone listening is read the Torah, read what we're providing for you of these translations of Yahweh's Torah and prophets. And trust him, because there is no hope in man.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, because I'm one of those continental United States people, one of the things that I always kept as part of my plan was that I could continue to work, you know, and I could draw a crowd, and people will pay to for me to teach them what I do best, which is art. And it was a wonderful gig. I could go anywhere, start over, and fill up a class. I mean, and fill up more classes, as many as I had energy to do. I'm very fortunate that way. They have shut me down. I have had two letters since, even when I shut the business down because of Terry, the physical side of it, because I couldn't maintain the overhead with no people there, without me being there. I transferred all the student body to an opportunity for us to teach over at the senior center, which has art classes, because they had a facility and they take a bigger cut, but who cares, you know, I just bring everybody with me and we went. And then, of course, that was shut down by the city because of COVID and you couldn't mingle. And now they're shutting it all down again after they opened up a little while. They shut it down again. So they have basically put people like me unable to make a living.
Which is what their intent is. Because if you do that, you're totally dependent. And they know. Like I've gotten to know the governor here. He recognized and came up and in a speech and says, "Listen, folks, I'm not in the position that other states are in. Even if our numbers go back up on COVID, which it appears they're going to, I can't shut the economy down again. We don't have the money. We can't survive it. So we're just going to have to live with it." And the fact of the matter is that the cost of shutting down the economy for 1 month was going to be worse than the consequence of COVID-19. And 2 months, far worse. 3 months, even worse. And then not recognizing that there was nothing to be gained by shutting down the economy. All you did, you didn't save anybody. You just postponed death. You flattened the curve in the sense that you pushed it further out. And in the process, you destroyed the currency, people's character, and the economy.
Industries. Every industry. I mean, look at the ship lines and the airplanes. And I mean, my God, they've destroyed everything.
Yes.
I just sit there and look at it and go, my God, are you kidding me?
Well, the number of bankruptcies that have already been announced and that are going to continue to be announced is just frightening. So that's where we are. There is only one hope. It is Yahweh. I did want to share this because there is so little media. And what has happened here recently, and it's going to affect us more and more, is that there are very few forums for mass communication. You know, it's Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing, and the YouTube. And they're all owned by the same liberals. Even our publishing is by Amazon. Bezos is a true liberal. And, you know, Facebook and YouTube, and, you know, that's Zuckerberg, a real liberal. And because Black Lives Matter has gone against these companies and said, okay, you're liberal, you're with us, therefore they're telling them that any content that speaks against the authoritarian shutdown of our economy and of freedoms with COVID-19, even if you're a doctor and say the shutdown of economies and of people's liberty of COVID-19 is not beneficial. If you're a doctor and you have medical evidence to prove that, your post will be taken off YouTube or Facebook. If you want to say Black Lives Matter is really racist, and the fact of the matter is blacks kill more blacks than whites kill blacks by 10 to 1, you can't say that. They'll delete your post. I did a show with IQ Arasuli where I said that Islam began as a criminal enterprise. That post was deleted as hateful by Facebook. The matter is, read the 8th Surah. That 8th Surah is the beginning of the Islamic era. There's no dispute about that at all. The 8th Surah is exceedingly clear. It says that Muhammad wanted to rob the Meccan caravan. That was his intent. And he did. It's black and white. But truth doesn't matter. And so they're controlling the dialogue. Now, this program is not just listened to live. The vast majority of people listen to this program because there is a number of Covenant family members that post this program all over the various places on the web. Gradually, there will be those who won't tolerate it. God's never been popular. You know, he's anti-religious. No. He's anti-political. It's going to be shut down for sure. So that's where we stand on all of this. And I just wanted you to know.
How long do you think we have, pal?
Well, you know, Yahweh made it pretty clear that they will be into the first half of the time of Jacob's trouble by 2027. The late 2029 or mid-2029, we'll make that transition into the second half. I think that the world will be, I would have said the world would be unrecognizable by late 2029, early 2030, which isn't, you know, that's 10 years from now. But I think the world's unrecognizable right now compared to what it was 4 months ago. So to say that it will be unrecognizable by 2029, 2030, now is not prophetic because it's already unrecognizable compared to what it was just a matter of months ago. We were on Mizmor 22. We're nearing the end of it. Next statement, the statement that we'll begin with tonight is the 26th statement. And it reads as follows, Kirk. It says, the responsive who engage, Anah. This is Anah with a wa at the end of it as opposed to a hey with the at the end of it. But it's essentially the same word. It says it has some slightly different connotations because Anah with the H would be to answer and respond. But Anah with the W means also to engage, to be straightforward, to be to have a bit of a humble nature, to be unpretentious. So the responsive who engage, who are humble and act by answering the call, who are unpretentious from Anah to answer, respond, and engage, shall be continually nourished, a call. They shall always be fed, and they shall genuinely be satisfied.
Yeah.
It is an interesting reality that those who have an appetite for drugs like George Floyd, they can never get enough. They're never satisfied. Those who have an unbridled thirst for power never get enough. Those who crave ridiculous amounts of money are never satiated. Those who are driven simply by their sexuality never find satisfaction. If you want to be genuinely satisfied, respond and engage with what Yahweh has provided. When you are nourished by his testimony, by his witness, by his prophets, by his Torah, you'll find it satisfying. The provision is abundant.
Let me suggest something just about one word. I've been doing something rather different in that I look up as much as I can every two-letter root to all these words. And the two-letter word is KL, Kalal, which means to be satisfied and able and to be completed and to finish and so forth. And then I ask myself, by whom? And the A that's put before it, in front of it to make a call is, of course, the Aleph. I don't think that's an accident. I mean, that's
right.
Always representing the authority, the head, ram. And it's just rather intriguing that way. And everything you said about Anah and Allah is exactly correct. Only there was one other thing I found that was kind of interesting, which was it also means to testify and to reply, but it also means to sing. And I'm thinking about the hey at the end of it with being where you're shouting for joy. But also I was thinking about Dode, because this is Dode's song.
Yes.
All those little things are buried in there. I realize this is not monumental to the translation, but it's, if nothing else, I find it encouraging, and other people probably will find it encouraging when you dig. They're just, he just kind of, yeah, he just kind of talks to you. He says, you know,
yes,
here it is. You know, it's just
like having a conversation with God. The response to engage shall be continually nourished and genuinely satisfied. Mizmor 22:26. Those who genuinely seek him. This is the smartest man who ever lived speaking to us.
Mm-hmm.
The man knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Those who genuinely seek him, actually follow him, and rely upon him, forming a relationship with him, Darashu, radiate Yahweh's brilliant and clear light. Those who search for him, account for him, ponder and petition him, forming a relationship or association with him, while consulting with him, call participle those who are genuinely defined by this search. Halal, Yahweh. Radiate, Yahweh's visible source of light.
Light, yeah.
You know, hallelujah, here you've got it, halal, Yahweh. Your persona, lebab ata, your inner nature and individual essence, your thoughts, your feelings and passions, your mind, your heart, your soul, your very conscience shall live forever based upon your choices.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Lebab is a lamb with two dilets. Why is it a double dilet? Is that just for emphasis when he writes it that way? When it's written that way?
Your persona. So this is, yeah, this is, you know, Leb is heart, but not heart.
Heart, of course.
But it's not heart in the current sense of the word heart. When we say heart in today's world, that means that
emotional
emotions. So somebody says, God knows my heart. Yeah, what are you saying?
Yeah.
He knows my emotions, my feelings, my cravings. And so a person today is views themselves as a good person if they have a good heart. Their emotions are good. But that's not what it meant back in the day. Back in the time this was used, the liver was the seat of emotion.
Yeah,
and
right.
The heart was the seat of judgment. And the reason that the heart was the sense of a sense of judgment is it's your judgment that causes you to have an attitude one way or another. It determines your cravings, your personality, your attitude, and your motivations. You will act based upon your judgment, and so the heart was the seat of judgment in the day. So, you know, you've got the two bayas, family, and home, and the shepherd staff. And so the shepherd staff is all about being led.
Leadership.
So it is
got
your
it.
Judgment
right.
that leads your actions. You know, it's the the seat of judgment causes you to act with regard to your family, right? Most people are motivated to protect
for the personal family,
to benefit their family, as also the family of God, the covenant family. So here
you've got a person's judgment or decisions, their motivations,
their inclinations regarding the two families, the family of man and the family of God, Lebab.
Okay, it's good. Thank you.
So those who genuinely seek him, actually follow him and rely upon him, forming a relationship with him, radiate Yahweh's beautiful, brilliant light. Your persona, your judgment, your inner nature, your the essence of your thoughts, your feelings, your passions, shall live forever based upon your choices. And if you were to define Lebab as your judgment, shall cause you to live forever based upon your choices. Works beautifully, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And so what Dode is saying is the choices you make based upon the decisions that you make regarding your search for God and choosing to rely on Him, which is why it is so darn important that you don't capitulate to your government and rely on your government. Because you can choose. You can rely on your government or you can rely on God. You can look for your military to protect you or God to protect you. You can have your government save you or God save you. You can trust man or trust God. And so, Dode is saying that if you engage,
choose well,
you're going to be nourished and you're going to be satisfied. And those who genuinely seek Him and follow after Him and form a relationship with Him, they're going to radiate Yahweh's light. And based upon their judgment and choices, they're going to live forever. That's
well,
just a
that
marvelous affirmation.
In your heart, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Consider what this is a summary of. It's a summary of Yahweh's fulfillment of Pesach, the doorway to life. So
yeah.
He's saying that if you process what we're talking about here and what Yahweh did for us in terms of serving as the Passover lamb and capitalize on that and form a relationship with Him based upon what you've learned through this psalm and His decision to fulfill this role, then in fact you're going to live forever. So it is a wonderful comment that has been shared with us here. And I don't know how
timely,
yeah,
after that first introduction you did, so about the state of the state. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you could find anything.
Choice, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
That is better.
Yeah.
So, if you're looking for an affirmation, this is it. Now, somebody has sent me a thing saying, looking at the chat, but I don't know how to get rid of the private text that they are chat box they have sent me, so I can't see any of the chat room now that they have a big marker right in the middle of the chat room. So unless they know how to remove that, I have no idea now how even to read the what was in the chat room. So I hope they can just whoever sent it to me can remove it, and I'll try to read what's there. Then this reads, "They will remember, and then they will return to Yahweh from every place on earth, and they will make this announcement on their own initiative at your appearance, every person and race." Now this is a is not the way you're going to find it presented in your King James Bible.
No.
They don't like translating Zakar as remember. They don't like giving this idea that it's Yahweh is going to return. So Shub is tough for them to translate. They'll never transliterate Yahweh, but instead replace it with Satan's title and name the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they have a real tough time with every place on earth because, of course, they only think that their little realm matters, that, you know, America is the new country of promise, or that someplace in Europe or some other place around the world, the Vatican. So they don't like that part. And then the next part is that they will translate the second part of Mizmor 22:27 and say that they will worship Yahweh. Chawa's primary meaning isn't to worship. In fact, it doesn't mean worship at all. It means they're going to verbally respond, explain, make an announcement. And this is the Hit Patel imperfect, which means it can't be worship because worship is impelled. It's something that we're taught. We're influenced by someone else, and the Hit Patel stem says there's absolutely no influence. You're doing this solely and completely on your own initiative without being influenced by anyone.
Yeah.
And so they will remember and they will return to Yahweh from every place on earth. And they will make this announcement on their own initiative at your appearance, every person and race. So who is returning?
Well, yeah, it's returning. And Dodi.
Yeah,
and of course, we know
Dodi, darn sure
this is that
it's not. Yeah, it's not
Yosha.
Yosha hasn't been mentioned in this. The Passover lamb does not make a second appearance. Not the Passover lamb.
Either.
Right.
No.
So it is it's Yahweh who is returning.
Does that just freak everybody out or something, or what? I mean, it doesn't. Instantly, it resonated with me. I said, "Well, that makes sense, totally." I mean, we've kind of been walking around it for years. That it's got to be Yahweh. I mean, it's got to be Yahweh returning. I mean, so it must have hit the nerve somewhere, because a lot of people just go. But, you know, when you talk to somebody about it, they say, really? They don't seem to be. Of course, I don't talk to a lot of Christians. Maybe that's my problem.
Yeah.
I don't get rocks thrown at me because I don't talk to them. That's probably too dangerous.
So,
anyway, excuse me.
Here we have Yahweh returning, and those who remember what he has said, those who recall this Mizmor and what he did for us as the Passover lamb, are going to make an announcement upon Yahweh's return. And they're going to come from every place on earth back to Yisrael, and they're going to make a declaration on their own initiative at your appearance, every race and place. So be aware, there's no one remembering or acknowledging Yosha. They're not returning to Jesus. He is not coming back. The reason that this and every other prophecy does not mention Yosha's name is that Yosha is irrelevant apart from his role as the Pesach lamb, which is how this Mizmor psalm began. But even then, we do not remember the lamb or honor the lamb. We celebrate its purpose. We enjoy the result. The next statement is, because indeed on behalf of Yahweh, the king reigns, providing leadership, parables, and proverbs on behalf of the people from different races and places. We have been talking, Kirk, for many weeks now about who is being discussed in this psalm. And of course, initially, it's the Passover lamb.
Okay.
And then there's a lot of discussion about what the Passover lamb is enduring, and even what that soul endures as it goes on to fulfill matzah on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And even what the soul endures as the soul is released from Sheol and reunified with the spirit. And so we've learned a lot about the nature of Yahweh's soul, the nature of the Passover lamb, the nature of the set-apart spirit, the nature of Sheol, the existence of the nature of Roman crucifixion, and of God, Yahweh's role in all of this, because right in the middle of it, Dode's very clear that it's Yahweh that he is celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
It's Yahweh that is important in this regard. And so, here, throughout it, though, there's been some references that we have really worked on to try to figure out, you know, who is being discussed. And now we know for certain that the person that is being talked about is Dode, because
mm-hmm.
it says, because indeed, on behalf of Yahweh, the king reigns. Well,
right.
This is following the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. You know, Dode stopped reigning 1,000 years before this.
Yes.
So if he says now, for indeed on behalf of Yahweh and on the approach of Yahweh, the king reigns, that means that Dode is is reigning again as king, as Yahweh
back in business.
Yeah, reappears.
Returns, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That should be clear.
So it is Dod who is coming back. It is Dod who is returned. And one of the things that's really interesting here is that Dod is reigning, not in the way that the governor of California is reigning by depriving people of their liberty and their livelihood. No. Dod is reigning by providing leadership, by providing proverbs and parables. He's teaching.
Yeah.
Everyone.
It's Mashal. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And all of that is exactly what it says when you look them all up. So I found it all over the place. Yeah. Sorry.
I am, by the way, I've now seen the chat room, and there is somebody in it that is seems to have a potty mouth, and it's disappointing that someone would do that. So I'm
don't do that. Yes,
I don't know who you are, pal, but go away. And if typically we would have someone in the chat room that is capable of just eliminating the idiots. But we do have an idiot. This next statement
one quick
is
question, just before before we move. When it says the king reigns in his maluka, is in that being a feminine word? Is that because the king is being aided by the Ruach Kodesh, or is that a stretch?
Is the king being aided by the Ruach Kodesh?
Yeah, because it's David, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, no, it's
just
clearly.
That's why it's written as a feminine word.
You know, well,
reigns.
You've got reign here as a feminine concept as opposed to a masculine concept, because king is a masculine term, where malaka is a feminine verb, and so a feminine concept here. And so it could be that's
just
it.
Trying to figure
Taurus,
out why
Taurus
it would
feminine,
be written that
covenant
way.
Feminine.
Yeah.
Covenant's feminine. Taurus feminine. Set apart spirit is feminine. So you can look at what
sense.
Other things they might be in conjunction with that would be, you know, he's gonna lead through teaching, and Torah teaching is a feminine
Torah
concept.
Torah teaching is feminine as well.
Could be.
Okay. That's good.
Interesting here is this next statement. And folks have a tough time with this next statement because of Dashen. It's not Masiyak, which is the typical word for anoint. But we know that Dashen should be translated anoint, because in the next psalm, the 23rd psalm, Dod says specifically of Yahweh that he, Dashen, anoints his head with oil. So since Dod wrote both, and the very next psalm uses Dashen in a critical spot where it can only be translated anoint, that's the right way to translate it here. All of the anointed ones of the earth who approach his presence shall be nourished, Akalia, as they settle down living in shelters while making their position known. This is really strong. What this says, first of all, is all of the anointed ones. Well, if you were to just look at Dod, Dod is the anointed Messiah. He's the Masiach. He's returning as the Masiach to shepherds God's people as the King of Kings. All right? No argument about that. But how many times have we said that Dod is the living embodiment of the covenant? Follow Dod. You can't follow the Passover lamb. That ends really badly. The lamb dies.
Yes.
You want to follow somebody, follow Dod. He lives.
Yes.
Don't follow the lamb. He dies. And what we've said is that if you listen to Dod, if you learn from Dod, if you follow Dod, you're going to live. But you're not only going to live, you're going to inherit the same covenant promises. Well, Yahweh calls Dodd his son. That means we'll be called sons and daughters of God as part of the covenant. But what it also means is Dodd was anointed by Yahweh. Guess what this says? All of the anointed ones. That means we're all going to be anointed by Yahweh.
Yeah.
Okay. And being anointed by Yahweh means to be, in this case, the best of all forms of anointing. You anoint us with his set apart spirit.
Right.
Of the earth. And now, by the way, this one is a little bit interesting because it says of the earth, could be of the land, in that at this time, most all of us aren't going to be here. At this time, we're going to be out having a grand old time in Shamaim and exploring the existing universe. Now, I think that almost all of us are going to return to watch Yahweh's return and Dodd in action. Because it's going to be the greatest show on earth.
You can't miss that show.
Right. So I think we're all going to return to see this. But it says those of the earth who are anointed, which means these are the individuals who listened to what Dodd had to say, who valued his Mizmor. You know, we're reading right now the last chapter of the second volume of Coming Home. And in it, we make it our way through the 23rd Mizmor. Dodd wrote darn near 100 of them. So we got a lot more to learn. But if you're listening to Dodd's Mizmor, if you're reading and reciting them, you're thinking about them, then you're going to be among those, if you don't make your decision to join the covenant family before the fulfillment of the Teruah harvest, you're going to be among those who are anointed of the earth. Well, those who are part of the covenant family now are going to be anointed, but not anointed of the earth. We'll be the anointed of Shabbaim returning to earth. Who approach his presence. You cannot approach Yahweh's presence and survive it unless you're anointed.
That's right.
This set apart spirit.
They have this set apart spirit. Yes.
They shall settle down and live in shelters while making their position known. What that means is, guess what time it is? Yahweh returns on Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliations. Five days later is Sukkah shelters, and we get to camp out with Yahweh for 1,000 years. Shelters is all about camping out with God during the millennial celebration of the Shabbat, of year 6,000 to year 7,000. So that time plays out in exactly the cycle, the formula that Yahweh had intended. And so this is an announcement of the celebration of the final Sukkah, the millennial Shabbat of Sukkah. And those who are there are making their position known. Nobody is wishy-washy anymore. If you've survived this, you are with God. You're making declarations to say you're with God. And Kirk, did you have any one of the words that you analyzed here that you...
Yeah, Dasheen was terribly interested in me. Of course, it's fat and prosperous. It's full, rich, and satisfied, which is in play here. The abundance comes through, if you look at the letters, the abundance is coming through Pesach Dor, nourishing words of the second letter, and to the children of the inheritance, which is the Nun. But I also found it was anoint, in addition as you did. And then I made a little side note with the oil of a being symbolic of light from a lamp. So we are, if you are anointed with light, you will shine, and therefore you will shine Yah's light. We'll be sharing that with the world as well, and we don't need to share it with each other in that sense that we're ignorant of it. But if you go to Sukkah, you know it's a whole new world now. So yes, but interesting also. The root word, which is a dilet shin, means to thresh. And I was thinking about the threshing floor where the grain is separated, and which is happening in this over those 5 days, with the lat being the door and the entranceway, and the shin being the pressure caused by teeth, and by this case, it's nourishing teeth. So you almost have encapsulated here. You have Dode coming back, doing his thing for with Yama over the 5 days from Yom Kippur to Sukkah, and you have anointed, and you have oil, and the light shining through. I mean, gosh, there's a lot in the word. It drives me crazy. It's wonderful, but I'm going, I can't connect that many dots. I mean, you can, but I just go, my God, now that goes to that, that goes to that, that goes to that. I mean, what an exciting thing to look at. It really is.
So this moves on to say, all of those who are habitually kneeling down, prostrating themselves, will descend, going down to the dust of the earth. Even the soul itself he will not allow to live. So there are those who have made their declaration. They've searched for Yah. They've acknowledged Yah. They've chosen to follow Yah. They've listened to Dode. They're following Dode. They're celebrating the return of Dode. We're having a grand old party. But there have always been far more people who kneel down, who prostrate themselves, who are continually bowing down on their knees. But God said, okay, if you choose to bow down, you're going down. Those who bow down will be abandoned, lowered, and brought down to the dust of the earth. Even the soul itself, the nefesh, he will not allow to live. When Yahweh returns on Yom Kippurim and returns the entire earth to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, there will be no religion. And so if you are religious, if you are political, if you're conspiratorial, if you're militaristic, you will not be allowed to live there. He's not going to allow any of those things there, because it is those very things that require the flood. God had to wipe away all the people who were political and militaristic and religious to give humanity a chance to survive to this day. Prosperity shall work with him. It shall be recounted, rewarded, and proclaimed of the approach of my upright one, the generations and their dwelling places. They shall come and conspicuously announcing, exposing, and declaring, he is right, vindicating, and just, doing so on behalf of the family members who shall be born, such that indeed they honestly acknowledged he has engaged and acted actually, perfectly, and completely accomplish this. This began at the waning hours of Pesach. This was Pesach in year 4000 Yah. Yahusha, with the soul of Yahweh, has just had the set-apart spirit leave him. He is now nothing more and nothing less than the Passover lamb. And he begins by reading from the psalm, quoting this psalm, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And the Passover lamb dies. That is where this began. And it ends by saying, Zerah, the seed that was sown by this event, shall work with him. And that's what we're doing. But it's not just us that are doing it. Yahweh has always chosen people to work with him. He likes work. He values work. He's a responsibility and accountability God. He understands that work builds character, that through work we get a sense of value and achievement. Going forward, we're going to work with Yahweh. Adam worked with Yahweh. He had responsibility.
Yep. Yes, he did.
You know, I got up this morning at 5:30. I walked to my office. I started translating and writing. It is a pleasure to work with Yahweh. And if you don't like that, you're not going to like eternity. Because Yahweh recognizes that if we lived in an entitlement culture and we just all were dependent upon Yahweh, just sitting there like bumps on a log, that it would be miserable for everybody. So we're going to have responsibility. We are going to work, and particularly for those that live through the millennial Shabbat, particularly if you are Yehudim, you're going to work. Dod worked, and Yahweh was proud of the work that he did. So posterity, the seed of this, shall work with him. And it shall be recounted, recorded, and proclaimed of the approach of my upright one, Idonani. There are lots of places, even where Moshe in the Torah refers to Yahweh as Idonani.
My upright one.
My upright one. Upright pillar. My base, my foundation. And I realize that does not roll off the tongue like my Lord.
No,
but the fact of the matter is that Edon is used exclusively in the Torah to convey the upright pillar that was set into the foundation of the tent of the witness, of the tabernacle of the witness, to hold it up, to make it steady, to enlarge it, the center pole of the tent of the witness. And it means upright pillar. Upright one, the one who stood up for us so that we could stand with him.
Standing with him.
It's symbolic of the upright pole of that formed the doorway of the first Passover. It symbolized the upright pole upon which the Passover lamb was hung. It is my upright one. He is speaking of Yahweh. Yahweh is his foundation. Yahweh is his upright pillar. And in English, it sounds clunky, I still admit. I mean, even as I translate it to this day. And the way that we ought to render it, probably, so it wouldn't sound so clunky, is Edoni. He's using it really as a title. We can transliterate a title.
Yeah.
It shall be recounted, recorded, and proclaimed of the approach of Edoni, the generations to the generations and their dwelling places. And so all the generations from this point on are going to hear the story, Shofar. It's going to be regarded and told, conveyed in full. The explanation is going to be accurate. It's going to be in writing of the approach of my Edoni to the generations and their dwelling places, Hador. They shall come and conspicuously announcing, exposing, and declaring, he is right, indicating and just. You know how many times a religious Jew says, Yahweh is right? Never.
Never say Yahweh, much less he's right.
Right. Yeah, it might be that the rabbi is right. Yahweh is right. Yahweh is vindicating.
Boy, that was freaky.
And
wow.
So what Dod is saying is that all the way through, you know, Yahweh has said Dod is the dot, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now Dod is saying, yeah, right. Who's right is Yahweh. To the degree that Yahweh is right, because I'm inspired by Yahweh, I'm also right. But I'm only right because Yahweh is right. I'm right with Yahweh, which makes me right because Yahweh is right.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Exactly. Correct.
Right. And by the way, that means that if you're going to be have a political persuasion, you ought to be right, not left.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. A little political humor here.
Old joke.
Okay. They shall come and conspicuous and out, exposing, declaring, he is right, vindicating, and just, doing so on behalf of the family members La'am, who shall be born, such that indeed they honestly acknowledge he has engaged and acted to actually, perfectly, and completely accomplish this. What did he accomplish? Pesach.
Why?
To fulfill the covenant's promises. The people, the family, the Am, the children of Yisrael, Yehudim, and all the Goyim who are willing to listen are going to recognize that Yahweh has done these things so that we can be born Yalad into his family. We're going to honestly acknowledge that Yahweh is the one who engaged and acted to accomplish all of this. We're not giving Jesus credit, not Christ credit, not the Lord credit, God's sake, not Allah credit, not Hashem credit, not Adonai credit. It's Yahweh who's right. And we're finally, as a family, going to acknowledge that he has done all of this. And so here is the most amazing Mizmor, talking about the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and all of the consequences of Yahweh doing what he said it was going to do. And the crescendo is, we're all going to acknowledge that Yahweh acted and engaged and did this to vindicate us, and that he is right. And once you accept the point that Yahweh is right, and you are right with him, you're correct in your acceptance and understanding and actions and engagement based upon what he has said, then you get to live forever. That's the crescendo of Mizmor 22. Of course, it's followed, Kirk, and we'll not get too far into this, but maybe the most beloved psalm, maybe the most beloved poem, maybe the greatest prose that has ever been written is Mizmor Psalm 23.
Yes.
It is, of course, different in the Hebrew than it is in your English Bible, but nonetheless, it is beautiful. It begins, a mizmor of Dod, a mizmor, a song, with lyrics accompanied by music, composed by the beloved, Yahweh, Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, an accurate transliteration of the name of Eloah God, guided by his Torah instructions regarding his Haya existence and our Shalom reconciliation. Yahweh is my shepherd, Ra'ah Ani, the one who leads me, cares for me, protects me, and feeds me. What a marvelous way to start. Not only does Dod acknowledge Yahweh by name, not as he's singing this song to Yahweh by name, not as he the beloved of Yahweh, Yahweh has already pronounced that this man, who at 8 years old was a shepherd, would Yahweh was equipping with his spirit and anointing him as the Messiah and the King to shepherd his sheep. The shepherd is now saying, Yahweh is my shepherd.
My shepherd. Yeah.
Now, if Yahweh is the ultimate shepherd, we would have a tough time finding a better shepherd than Yahweh. If the greatest shepherd of all time is acknowledging that Yahweh is his shepherd, perhaps we ought to follow his advice and accept Yahweh.
And recognize the same thing, exactly.
Yeah. You know, so many times when Yahweh has spoken of a role that you or I may be doing, or that he's speaking of something like he's looking for someone to engage with him, and Yeshaya says, you know, here I am, send me. And what I constantly encourage people to do, like, you know, there's a whole chapter of Yeshaya, and maybe even three, that are devoted to the Choder and the Choder's contribution to this neck, nesh, really, sign and banner that Yahweh will lift up. But I said, what you ought to do is personalize this. Read yourself into the words. And what I'm suggesting here, when Dod sings this song to Yahweh, and he says, Yahweh is my shepherd, you ought not read that as Yahweh is Dod's shepherd. You ought to sing that as Yahweh is my shepherd. Yahweh is my shepherd. Yeah, Dod is my shepherd. But Yahweh is Dod's shepherd, which makes Yahweh my shepherd, Which means that Yahweh is my shepherd. He's all of our shepherd.
Of course.
You know, shepherd is a word we seldom consider. You know, at least apart from Dod's relationship with his people, where it addresses why God chose this man above all others. And yet here in the world's favorite psalm, Yahweh, the creator of the universe, is called a shepherd. Now, Yahweh is God. The title God is superior to the title shepherd. Yahweh is creator. The title creator is superior to shepherd. And yet the world's favorite psalm, Yahweh, the creator of the universe, bears
the title
shepherd.
Yeah.
And by the way, loves it. While it should not be a surprise in that his son tended sheep, it defines God as desirous of living with his flock. That's what shepherds do. You know, being a shepherd of sheep, you live with your flock. You develop a rapport and a relationship with your flock. Your flock depend upon you. And you receive a lot back from your flock. Sheep are surprisingly thoughtful animals, nonviolent animals, supportive animals, animals desirous of living together in a flock, animals capable of executive decision making. Sheep are remarkable. And the role of a shepherd with their sheep is remarkable. You know, cattle don't trust the rancher. Sheep trust their shepherd. Cattle don't naturally follow the rancher. Sheep will follow the shepherd. The rancher does not live with the cattle. The shepherd does. The sheep. Being a shepherd also reveals something God must desire in us. Sheep are naturally gregarious and they have social instincts, which cause them to bond with other members of their flock over their lifetimes. Sheep build enduring friendships and stick up for one another. Nonviolent animals, sheep not only prefer smiles to frowns, emotionally they are stressed by separation from the flock. Remarkably intelligent, they listen and they are blessed with problem-solving skills. Using this aptitude to gain the attention of their shepherd, whom they genuinely respect and esteem. They're typically playful and joyful. Sheep have impressive memories and are constantly observing and learning. They identify with their names and they respond to their name. They will come when called. Sheep are remarkably open to being led, indeed preferring it. While each flock will choose a lead ram to protect them, sheep are otherwise adverse to social hierarchies. Their only defense from attack is to flee, fulfilling the first requirement of forming a relationship with Yah. Intelligent, complex, sociable, even adorable, sheep manifest the best of human nature while not reflecting our violent, deceitful, destructive, or oppressive characteristics. Yeah, it's Yahweh does all right on his metaphors. When Yahweh picks a metaphor, you can usually do a little research.
Go to the bank with that one.
And go to the bank with it and find out that his metaphors, as they say, walk on all fours. He doesn't miss.
Very good.
Now, With Yahweh being Dothan's shepherd, he says, I shall not be deprived. Lo, Chatzir, I will not be negated. I will not recede or be decreased. I will not be reduced in status. I will not be found inadequate. I will never be lacking or without, never needing something I do not have. And I will never be impoverished. To translate it, the Lord is my shepherd, and replace Yahweh with Satan, and then say, I shall not want, is so disastrous. It means, you know, that, what, is God giving you income? Yeah, are you on God's security? You know, is he sending you a check each month? No, it's not what this says. I shall not be deprived. Deprived of what? Life? Liberty?
Freedom, yes.
I will not be negated. My soul isn't going to be annihilated. I'm not going to be negated. Yeah. Look at Dodd. He's coming back as God.
Light.
As if he were God. Wow. And I will not recede or be decreased. No, why? Because he's going to be increased. I will not be reduced in status. No, he's going to. This is the man that had the ultimate status. You cannot have more status with God than Dothan.
Mm-hmm.
And Dothan says, no, I'm not going to be reduced in status. I mean, that's the whole concept of replacement theology, is they took all of the status that God gave to Dothan and gave it to their caricature named Jesus Christ, who doesn't represent any of those things. I mean, the one thing that Jesus Christ, correctly known as Yosha, represents is the Passover lamb, which means he most certainly isn't the shepherd. The lamb and the shepherd are different individuals.
Yosha
was the lamb. Dothan is the shepherd. Dothan is the Messiah, not Yosha. Dothan is the Son of God, not Yosha. Dothan is the shepherd. Yosha is the lamb. It is Dothan who's coming back as if he were God, according to God. Dothan is the chosen one. Dothan is the one who is set apart on behalf of Yisrael. And so here's the man with the greatest status with God, and he says, I shall not be reduced in status. I shall not be found inadequate. I will never be lacking or without or needing something that I do not have. I shall never be impoverished. Once again, we should read ourselves into this. Yes. Every bit of that is true of every covenant member. You're never going to be deprived. Now, it's not to say that you're not going to get sick. And our dearly beloved Jackie, who is not only has gone from the queen of all editors, who makes what I write to actually seem intelligent by removing all of the typos. And, you know, she
made me look good.
Her, you know, her daughter and her daughter's husband and her grandchildren were exposed to COVID and got really sick. And, you know, she may come down with it. We don't know. I think she's now 9 days without symptoms. But Yahweh didn't say that because we are covenant that we won't get sick. He just says that ultimately we get to live forever with him. And so we all have our aches and pains, and we go through challenges, and it's kind of how we endure through these challenges that causes others to say, you know, that person's got something special. You know, if everything is going great, everybody can be smiled. But when it's not going well, and you can still function, you can still hold your head up, you can still be positive, you can still advance the truth about Yahweh, that's when it matters. That's when it's really credible. And Dothan, who had many, many days where he had aches and pains, where his disappointed him, things that were horrible things, and his people disappointed him, and his enemies attacked him, and even for a while, the king of his country sought to kill him. Oh, no, I'm never going to be deprived. I'll never be impoverished. I'll never be diminished in status. It's true with all of us. So it's probably a really good place for us to stop. Because while the rest of the psalm is equally marvelous, just acknowledging that Yahweh is our shepherd and that as a result, we will never be deprived of what really matters. Our souls will never be negated. Our souls will live forever. And that God is always going to be found adequate for whatever we need. We can depend upon him. We will never be impoverished. We're being enriched, inheriting the entire universe. So, my friend Kirk, I understand
yes,
you're not
sir.
Getting a lot of sleep these days. You are a full-time nursemaid and helper person. Yes, and that Terry is home, thrilled that she is home. We got to talk with her about a week ago, and it was wonderful to hear her voice. And we hope that these last days are as positive as they could possibly be. She's a special lady, a special member of the covenant, and we've thoroughly enjoyed sharing with Terry and with you and the relationship that you have. So I hope that this time that's left is as positive as it can possibly be for the both of you.
Well, thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
And we will be back with you this time next week. We hope that we don't have quite as much of an interruption on the chat room, but it is how others in the Covenant family responded to the disruptive person, and all of that was marvelous. So, good night, everyone. Happy Shabbat, and we'll be back with you next week.
Yes, sir. Good night.